As we begin this time of study of the Bhagavad Gita, want to remind those of you who are returning and inform those of you who are joining for the first time that I am beginning with reading the teachings that Yogacharya O'Brien put together as her notes for leading us through Gita study over the past few years, and then I share a few insights of my own. And God willing, we then have time for you to share a bit. So we'll begin with a moment of prayer, preparing ourselves to study. Open your hearts and your minds to the infinite. As Yogacharya's guru would say, think of God, however, God is real for you, which is really the spirit of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. Come to know the reality of the divine within you. And however you approach that reality, it is receptive to you. Let us be aware of the indwelling divine Lord of love seated in every heart. That divine friend portrayed in the Bhagavad Gita as Lord Krishna. That divine consciousness that responds to our every cry, to our need for wisdom, clarity, direction, and guidance. Let us approach the Bhagavad Gita with that spirit of reverence and receptivity, knowing that it is our own dialogue with the one that is all love, all mercy, all compassion, and all wisdom. Om, peace, peace, peace. For today's exploration, we will explore a little bit about the theme of spiritual maturity, because we see that addressed in the very beginning with Arjuna and his struggle with his dharma and the call to rise up to spiritual maturity. We want to think about our own spiritual journeys and the call to spiritual maturity and what that means for us. In the last couple of lessons, I focused on the scene of the battlefield and how Arjuna is poised to go into battle. And he's there with Lord Krishna as his cousin, as his friend, as his teacher, and as his guide. Then he asks Krishna if he will drive his chariot between the armies so he can see who is there to battle. And then the story unfolds when we find that Arjuna sinks down into confusion and despair. So, I want to explore that a little bit more with you today. What is the cause of that? Where does it come from? When we begin reading it, it's most likely you could have the idea that Arjuna is just plopped down there onto the battlefield. Then he says, I need to look around and see where I am. So something we want to be aware of is that Arjuna has signed up for the battle. We often talk about how he is a warrior and he has everything that he needs, And his whole life has brought him to this moment. It's the same for us with our Swadharma, with our Dharma. Everything has brought us to the moment we are in. And we have everything that we need to face it. What I want to underline today is that Arjuna signed up for the fight. He wasn't just plopped down there, he signed up. This is a battle to regain the kingdom, as Paramahansa Yogananda talked about it. It is a reign for the soul. It is for the reign of the soul. It's a battle to reclaim the soul life. And Arjuna signed up for it. He knew what he was signing up for. So prior to coming to the battlefield, it was his choice. And he chose Krishna as his support in this battle. He made those decisions. Then he comes to the battlefield after having made the decision to follow his dharma. We can think of it in terms of the allegorical significance of the Gita. We make a decision to consciously engage in spiritual practice. We make a decision to follow a path. And then we have some wavering that goes on. How am I going to do this? There are conflicting needs that I have. How will I make the time to meditate? I need to get the kids off to school. How will I change my diet? Other people in the family don't want the diet that I have. How will I deal with this? There's all of my friends, and they want to do activities that no longer interest me. What will become of me? I will just be lonesome. I won't have any friends. I won't have family. All these thoughts go on in our mind after having made the choice. We begin to have doubts about the choice that we've made to be on the spiritual path. While we can say that we're compelled by the grace of God within us, which we are, and there is that support for us, it's also a choice that we made. And part of spiritual maturity is coming to see that choice that we've made. That's an important part of our journey. So when we look at it, Arjuna makes this choice. It's his dharma to follow this path. We understand it as an allegory of the path of awakening. He's made the choice, and then he comes into it and he becomes filled with doubt and confusion and despair. What is the cause of that doubt and confusion and despair? Is it because he wasn't expecting he was going to be in battle? No. He knew it was going to be a battle. He knew that. So, what is the cause of his despair and confusion? I could say that one of the things we could point to as the cause of his confusion and despair is that he forgets. He forgets. He forgets that he's chosen the path. He forgets that it's his Swadharma, his purpose for life. And he forgets that the Lord of love is there to support him. He forgets those things. He becomes overwhelmed, overcome with the obstacles he's facing, and he forgets. And this seems to be part of being a human being. Part of human consciousness is this forgetfulness. This is such an interesting teaching. The Bhagavad Gita is a small segment of the great epic, the Mahabharata, that tells the whole story of this war, the backstory. And going forward from there, we have all this woven together. So the Gita is like a window into divine guidance. The divine voice that comes to us really at time of despair. I can't do this. God, help me. Help me. We've all been there. That is a powerful moment. Bhagavad Gita means the song of God. And the song of God comes to us not usually when we're in fields of flowers. But when our life is at that point where we're really challenged, we're struggling, and we have forgotten. So there are parallel stories in the Mahabharata, and one of them is that after this time of the Bhagavad Gita and the story of the epic story of the war, after that, Arjuna is hanging out with Krishna again, and he says, "Oh, Krishna, I remember that we had the most interesting conversation this time right on there on the battlefield. I remember we had this conversation, but I have forgotten what you said to me. Would you mind telling me again? You repeat it? I mean, this is after the whole Gita, all 18 chapters. I forgot." So there are certain things that we gain from that little teaching, that little sidebar. And that's that it's natural that we have forgetfulness until we are established in self and God realization. It's natural to this cycle of forgetting and remembering. And it's helpful to know that because it helps us to become more resolved for our spiritual practices to have spiritual maturity. Then we see that we don't have to sink into despair at moments of conflicts or forgetfulness. We can remember. And Yogacharya writes, "I wrote this little manual for sadhana, for spiritual practice, living the eternal way. I thought, how can I put into simple language this eternal teaching that we have and the four principles of how we move through time and space? It is. There's one reality that the truth of all that is, one life, one power, one presence. It is. And the second, we are it. We are expressions of that single reality. We're not separate from it. God is the life of our life. And yet, the third teaching, we forget. That is because we become identified with the body and the mind with circumstances, and we fall into forgetfulness on the battlefield of life. But then we remember. That's our certain destiny because it is the truth of our being. We're always being pulled to that remembrance. So here we are on this field of Dharma. I'll read this little segment to you from Chaturvedi Bhadrindranath's Mahabharata commentary. He writes, "It's a different story that Arjuna forgot that lesson not long after the war was over and won. One evening, he said to Sri Krishna, 'I vaguely remember you giving me a long lecture on the battlefield. What was it that you had to say? I have forgotten it. Will you kindly tell me again?' Naturally, the teacher felt disappointed and irritated. He said to Arjuna, 'You are indeed a man of little faith and of intelligence even less. To repeat what I have said then is beyond my capacity now.' Nevertheless, in order to please his friend, Sri Krishna gives another D course known as Anugita, secondary Gita. I hope you've had this experience when the sound of God, the revelation of what is real, what is true, unfolds within you. It is a living reality in the moment, and you get it. You get it clearly. It's a whole thing with the circumstances that you are in. Then it becomes a samskara, a memory, which you are trying to apply in other moments of your life until you become established in that knowing. But it's very much woven into the experience, the fabric of your life. This is why we have this teaching. It is not information. Could you repeat that teaching for me? Think of the teachings that you've had that are life transforming, that are life changing. They're holistic. They are grasped with the very fabric of your being, with the knowing of your soul, and they are transformative. They're not words that you can write down. That doesn't mean you don't need to take notes. They are a higher knowledge that is beyond words and thoughts. It's not grasped in the same way as something we would read in a book. That's an important way to see how the teachings unfold and how it unfolds in our life. It unfolds through our activity in life, through our grappling with the relationships in life. The dilemma that Arjuna has, many of the commentaries focus on that, on his dilemma. Arjuna is being a coward. He doesn't want to face his difficulties in his dharma. But there's also a very real dilemma being played out there. In other words, he has some conflicting sense of dharma. He has his dharma, his swadharma, his life purpose as a warrior. He also has his swadharma as a warrior for the protection of dharma. That's his duty. And he has this duty as a warrior to protect those he's going in battle with. The teachers and the family members, the relatives, he has some sense of dharma to protect them. So, what does he choose? What is the higher way? When I dive back into the Gita, into this scene, I think of Lahiri Mahashaya saying, this Dharma Kshetra, this world that we live in, is an auspicious place for sadhana. This world that we live in is an auspicious place for sadhana. This is where it happens. This is where we can have the experience of the highest truth and be guided. Sadhana means to go straight to the goal. It's knowing that our dharma, knowing what it is, knowing what our life purpose is. That begins to clear up the clouds when we are in confusion. We remember that, we remember our dharma, we remember that, then the confusion can be cleared up. When I read the Bhagavad Gita, I like to enter the scene with my mind, my heart, and my body. I like to see what stands out on that particular day, what I can resonate with, what feels strong to me. And I hope in these talks you have that same experience. Like there's something like, oh, that, I feel something there. Well, what is it? Take that little piece with you. That, oh, contemplate it, explore it. Let the Lord speak to you about that spark that has been lit. In this recent reading of the Gita, getting ready to talk with you, I saw three things happening in the first and second chapters that have to do with the bow, with Arjuna's bow. The first is when Arjuna is preparing for the battle, when he's surveying and he has this readiness. And it's written in the Gita that he lifts his bow. He lifts it, and esoterically, metaphysically, the bow is symbolic of the spine in both the psychological sense and the spiritual sense of the astral spine. The psychological sense is that when we say someone has spine, they have courage, they're upright, they're poised, they're ready. He lifts the bow, he lifts the spine, he's ready, he's has a willingness, a strength, a power, which is what he represents. Arjuna represents the soul's power of willingness. So then we have the scene where he starts to have doubt and confusion. And it's been my experience on the path and with many I have counseled over the years that confusion stems very often from knowing what divine will is in our life and being afraid to carry it out. It's not that we don't know. It's that we actually know, but we're afraid. We have self-doubt. There's this interference in the mind from being firm and holding the bow up of doing what we know is ours to do. Many of you who knew Yogacharya's guru, Roy Eugene Davis, know that. That was often his mantra for Dharma. Do what you know you should do. So many times we have seen when this feeling of confusion arises, if we really get truthful, it's not that we're confused, it's that we're unwilling. for whatever reason, unwilling to trust the Lord, to trust ourselves, to trust the guru, to trust the teachings. And the next movement of the bow is that the bow begins to slip from his hands. He begins to lose his courage and fall into confusion. Why? Because he's forgotten his dharma. And then in the final movement of the bow, in the first two chapters, he actually throws the bow down with a sense of defiance. I'm just not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to assert my egoic power to say, I'm just not going to do it. The interesting thing when we read the Gita, it's like we're watching a play. And we know that he's in the middle of it. He's on the battlefield. He cannot say, I'm not going to do it one way or the other. He has to act. We can have a kind of bemusement about Arjuna. Yeah, go ahead, throw it down, but look where you are, guy. Go ahead, say you're not going to do it. That is what happens for us on the spiritual path. We get to a certain point, we know what our calling is, and then we say, it's too hard. I have too many other responsibilities. I'm just not going to do it. But you're already there. You may put it off, but you don't have that choice in a sense because you're already there and you've already chosen it. Just like Arjuna in the beginning, he has chosen and the Lord is there with him. He begins to rationalize all the reason why it's not a good idea to go into battle. He kind of holds up the highest teaching and he's lecturing the Lord. That's another part of the scene that's a little bit funny, right? Krishna, do you know? Do you understand what this is all about? And he goes on and on. That's what I want to say about spiritual maturity. What we see here is that Arjuna is trying to rationalize being inactive by saying it is not the highest way to go into battle. He's saying that destruction can come from this. The family will be destroyed and the culture will be destroyed and it will just lead to suffering and sorrow. And it's just better if he should just die. That would be better than going into this battle. This is the kind of rationalizing he's doing, masquerading as wisdom. And in some ways, he's shining a light on a higher teaching, but he's forgetting his dharma. So he's using spiritual teachings to rationalize his inactivity. And of course, the Lord doesn't fall for it, and neither do we. When we're reading the Gita, we can see that this is what he's doing. Spiritual maturity is about being able to live in the world and do what is ours to do, to follow our dharma, with the awareness of the highest wisdom, the higher knowledge that life is eternal. Beings are not born, they do not die, so on and so forth. This highest teaching we need to know, but we cannot use that as rationale to not engage in the world. One teacher put it this way. He said it would be like a doctor who has the dharma of being a doctor to operate on someone to save a life. It would be like if the doctor is studying Vedanta, and then he says, well, there's no point of in me operating on this person because ultimately this person is going to die. This is the kind of logic that Arjuna is trying to put forth in his arguments. And with spiritual maturity, we see that there's a higher wisdom about ultimate reality, and there is also life in this world. And we're in the middle. We are on the battlefield. Spiritual maturity is about how to live that highest wisdom, how to have that highest wisdom and have it inform the choices that we make, and not use it as a way to try to escape from the world and from our duties. I want to conclude today with a little more about this forgetfulness of Arjuna in part of his lament and his excuses. In the first chapter, the 45th verse, he says, "Ah, alas, we are resolved to do a great evil, which is to be intent on killing our own people through greed for royal pleasures." Now he's forgotten that they are not in this battle over greed for royal pleasures. The Pandavas that Arjuna is representing are on the battlefield to restore the rightful rulership of the kingdom of the soul. They're not in this battle to try to have pleasures and own the pleasures of the kingdom. Another part of the backstory is that the Pandavas do everything they can with their opponents, with Duryodhana, to try to make peace and to try to have it work out. They try to bargain with Duryodhana. They say, okay, if you're not going to let us have the kingdom back, how about just a village? How about just a small part for the Pandavas? And I really like that part of the story, because what it says to me is that there is no bargaining with our lower drives. And we try to do that, whether it's a sense drive for something that we know is not useful for us, we say, how about just a little bit? And just a little bit opens the door, and then there's more. Or we say, just for today, I'll sleep in and I won't meditate. And then the next day and the day after, it becomes easier to miss meditation. There's no bargain that can be struck with these lower drives and tendencies. Arjuna has forgotten his purpose. It's not about the material jewels. It's about the jewels of realization. And it's about being able to live in the soul's awareness, live in the soul's freedom. One of the most striking teachings when we come to this first part of the second chapter is Arjuna turning to Krishna, asking for help. And we have Krishna's rebuke of Arjuna, telling him to pick up his bow, stand up, to arise. Then there's this beautiful teaching when Krishna laughs. Sometimes it's translated as Krishna smiles. Arjuna is continuing with his lament, his despair. And then there's a beautiful moment where Krishna looks at him and Krishna has a smile. Or sometimes it's defined as Krishna laughs. It's such a beautiful moment. And she writes, it always makes me think about being with my guru. The times I would go to my guru with lament, this is happening, and this is happening, and this is happening, and this is happening. And at some point, my guru would start to laugh. And I never felt that he was laughing at me. But the laugh was a laugh of divine remembrance. It was a laugh that said so many things. Among the things that the laugh said was, "Don't you see? Don't you remember who you are, what you signed up for, what this is about?" And pretty soon I would be laughing too. The teaching was, you're not seeing clearly. You have forgotten. I want to conclude today's Gita teachings with a lovely translation of the Psalms from the Hebrew Bible. And this translation was done by the Zen teacher, Norman Fisher, who has been our friend here at the center. And it's lovely to read his Zen-inspired translations of the Psalms. And those of you from a Jewish or Catholic background, Christian background, can also recall in those teachings the whole battlefield thing, which is so much of the Psalms. It's about the battle that is being experienced. And this is Psalm 59. So I want to make this interfaith bridge with the teachings of the East and the West. Psalm 59, Psalms of David, his songs. Psalm is a song of the Lord. This one's called Release Me from Torment. Defend me against opposition. Relieve me from crookedness, from blood hate. Let me be free. Look, they lie and wait for my soul. Mighty, they gather in troops against me, not because of my transgressions, not because of my shoddy deeds, for no reason I know. They rush to prepare an attack. Rouse yourself, wake up the defenses. Come near me and see, you protector of the strugglers. Awaken and overturn the enemies. Show them mercy by giving them their due. They will return in the evening, howling like dogs, prowling around the city streets, sputtering, raving with their mouths, swords clashing within their lips. They say, who hears us? But you laugh at them. You hold them all in derision. Because he is fierce, I wait for you. You are my only defense. You are kindness. You go before me, letting me see the shape of my hope against this torment, no matter how strong. Oh, don't destroy them that I would forget, but drive them upward and bring them to rest. You, my shield, my barrier, because of their misdirected mouths, the confusion of their lips, let them be caught by their pride, by the lies and accusations they utter. Let their fury finally end. Let it be no more. And let them know at last that you are Jacob's mystery, as far and as wide as the earth is. And they will return in the evening, howling like dogs, prowling around the cities, mad for something to eat, lunatic for satisfaction, lusting for something to bring them peace. But I sing of your strength. Yes, in the morning's dawn, I sing the steadying light of your kindness. For you have been my release, my refuge on a day when I was full of distress. To you, my strength, I will sing. For you, my shield, my kindness. That was a very long lesson that Yogacharya wrote for us today. I'm pretty sure that when she offered it, she edited about half of it out because it was so long. So I have just a few comments to share about spiritual maturity. and what it means in light of the Bhagavad Gita and how we can recognize and cultivate it in our lives. So Yogacharya O'Brien has taught us that spiritual maturity is about being able to live in the world and fulfill our dharma, our life purpose, while holding awareness of highest wisdom, that this life is eternal. It means walking our path with clarity without using spiritual teachings to rationalize our own preferences or avoid personal responsibility. The Gita presents us with Arjuna, the noble warrior struggling with doubt, and he wants to abandon his dharma, using seemingly spiritual reasons to justify his hesitations. Wouldn't it be more compassionate not to fight? If life is eternal, why should I act? So haven't we done this in our own ways? Haven't we done something similar? If it is the destiny of every soul to awaken, if that is true, do I really need to meditate today? I'm going to awaken eventually anyway. If everything is God's will, do I really need to make an effort? Krishna responds with clarity. Awakening is certain, yes, but our choices determine the path we take. And the Gita reminds us that spiritual growth requires self-effort. Divine grace is ever present, but we must open ourselves to receive it. So how often do we seek guidance from our teacher, our guru, a mentor? How often do we seek guidance? We receive it clearly and then hesitate. We lecture them like Arjuna lectured Krishna. Are you sure that's the right thing to do? That doesn't seem spiritual or loving. Some people might get upset. Now, Arjuna does this too. He questions Krishna's wisdom caught between his personal attachments and the higher truths he's being shown. But Krishna does not waver. He reminds Arjuna that responsibility for his spiritual progress lies with him alone. And this is a crucial aspect of spiritual maturity, accepting that while a teacher, while our guru can guide us, we must ultimately walk the path. Clarity comes not from just receiving wisdom, but from acting upon it. Not just knowing what we heard or have been taught, but using it in our life. And another key sign of spiritual maturity is realizing that no one else is responsible for fulfilling our needs, our physical, emotional, or spiritual needs. If, as infants, we cry when we're hungry, someone, and often several people, run to feed us. But as adults, if we cry, people are just going to look at us like we're weird. We are responsible to nourish ourselves. No one is going to come and take care of us. They may say, hey, there's more nourishment there. Turn that way. But we have to turn that way. And the same is true spiritually. No one else can meditate for us. No one else can cultivate our inner peace. Yet, in the sense, our higher needs are always filled by the divine. When we surrender to divine will through the fulfillment of our dharma, all of our worthwhile Needs and desires are met in time and in abundance. So the Gita calls us to spiritual maturity, to live with awareness, act with self-effort, and trust the divine. Trust God and gurus. It is a journey of growing clarity and deepening surrender. So we can ask ourselves, where in my life am I rationalizing in action? Where in my life am I rationalizing inaction or taking inappropriate action? Not doing what I know I should do. Where am I resisting the guidance that I have already received? How can I take full responsibility for my spiritual path and my life? Where am I resisting the guidance I've already received? How can I take full responsibility for my spiritual path and my life? So it's my prayer that we continue to walk this path with clarity, courage, and the deep knowing that our higher self is ever guiding us. Om. That was a lot today. I think this part about spiritual maturity is very, very important. It's a theme to watch as you continue in the Gita. Watch it arise again and again. So if anyone has comments, thoughts to share, you can take a few minutes to do that. Everyone's afraid because trying to be spiritually mature. Ishwari?
I just wanted to say that when I'm struggling sometimes, this whole conversation happens in my head, and something comes out and it goes, oh, I already said yes. There's that point where I get to that essence of, I get to that essence, hard to describe, but I go, oh, I already said yes. And usually that opens things up. Just wanted to add that. Thank you for the talk today. Very grateful.
Thank you, Ishwari. It's so true. If we have that moment of remembrance, oh, I already said yes. I mean, it's sort of like we decide we're going to, let's keep it simple. We're going to drive to, where should we drive? Portland. We're going to drive to Portland. And we get toward Mount Shasta and we find out that, the view isn't going to be as pretty as we hoped going past Mount Shasta. So our minds start, or we're going to stop there and stay overnight. We have this plan. Actually, this happened. And that Airbnb, that AC doesn't work, blah, blah, blah. It's really hot. The mind can say, oh my gosh, it's so much better at home. I'm just going to turn around. But we've already made the plan. So that remembrance is helpful. Mukti?
Thank you so much, Sundari. This is just a wonderful and important teaching for me to hear today.
Mukti, we can't hear you very, very well.
Yeah. Sorry. Thank you so much. This is a very important teaching for me to hear today. And I just, it gives me clarity over family events where something was really difficult and I handled it well for a little while and then I couldn't stand it anymore. And I actually called I reached out for help, and I think what I was hoping was that she would tell me I didn't need to do it well anymore. And she gave me very specific direct advice, and I used it and used my own thinking to rationalize not taking her very specific advice. It was so hard. It was so hard, and took me quite a while to come back to maturity around everything that was happening. And looking back on it now, this just gives me so much clarity. And even though I wish I had been able to take a better path right away, it also gives me a funny kind of reassurance that I'm back in myself. I can see more clearly what happened, have compassion for myself, echo it, and go on without really feeling a lot of judgment about it, but ready to at least right now be where I need to be. And I just want to say thank you. It's very, very helpful.
Thank you, Mukti. Yeah, you know, Arjuna is a really cool, advanced warrior. And he throws a temper tantrum and starts lecturing his guru. So, you know, most of us have done that, at least in our mind. Well, you know, I know I signed up for this, but she doesn't really understand my life. I mean, really, how hard it is to feed my cat. And my cat must eat at 6:28. So how am I going to get to meditation by 6:30? Right? We have all these, you know, my cat is a being. It's so important. She's on a special diet. Maybe I'll get there at 6:35. Well, now I'm late, so I probably shouldn't go. It's funny. Yeah. But Arjuna's a warrior. He's got all these tools and he throws a temper tantrum. But he, in the end, is victorious because he surrenders to the Lord. So it is reassuring, isn't it? Our shortcomings are so small compared to his. All right, any other? Yes, Rami.
Namaste, Acharya, and everyone. A joy to be with you for these wonderful teachings today. What resonated for me is the quote from Lahiri Maha that Umaji used. The world is an appropriate place, auspicious place for sadhana. And as I'm contemplating the world, and as it is, as it appears, how can I respond to it with maturity? That includes a stream of news and the apparent chaos. So I'm in the inquiry of what is mine to do, and anchoring into that as I make my list of to-do things for the day, so that the actions are from inspiration. And then I have a navigational steering. So I find this really helpful. And I love Arjun's lament. Thank you.
Yeah, we are definitely in the middle of a battlefield, aren't we?
We are.
In our world and in our nation, we are in the middle of a battlefield. No matter what your beliefs are. You know, as they say, no matter what side you're standing on, we are in the middle of a battle. And I think probably all of us, each of us, are asking, what should I do? What is mine to do? And some of us, we, you know, have a profession or it is our dharma to physically go do something. And others of us, our dharma of how to navigate this very real battlefield is different. But we need to do something, right? We have to act. We can't just pretend that nothing's going on. We are in the middle of a battle. Okay, Cynthia.
It reminds me of the trickster, where we're self-deceiving ourselves, and yet we think we're on the path. It also reminds me of the fight and flight within us, fight, flight, or freeze. And for some reason, that forgetting, it's like it's in our mind. We know better intellectually, but hello. There's a blockage there, you know, a blind side, and it's really weird. How do we get ourselves in that situation? The trickster.
Yes, thank you for that. It is like the trickster, and you know, we have this blessing of our sangha, our spiritual community. And coming together to hear the teachings. And this saves us in many ways when we're in the middle of this battle. But to know that we're together, to have the strength of a group of peers who are in this battle with us, is very fortifying, wouldn't you say? You know, you can look around, you can go in gallery view, you can look around. And some people had to leave because we've gone over today. I'm glad we got to have all of Uma's notes shared. I'll be interested to look at the two recordings and see what happened. But to look at this group and to know we're in it together. And I know, you know, just with politics in particular, I know that some of you are deeply impacted because your dharma has to do with being on the front lines for all of us. And some of us are deeply impacted because we are aware, but we don't know what to do. We know we need to do something. Arjuna knows he needs to act. He does not know what to do. So I want to tell you with regards to this that now I think this may be because Shanti, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this may be because of the time that Yogacharya O'Brien was born, that she came into this world, that she was what you call a child of the 60s. And so, you know, going to marches and things like that was part of her life from early on. And so she has gone to marches. I've gone with her. It was eye-opening to me because I wasn't raised in that era. So it wasn't a natural thing for me. So she has taken physical action like that, written letters, and you know, there are things that we can do that are ours to do. But we have to be aware and we have to ask, you know, is it mine to do to give money? Is that what I should be doing? Is it mine to do some action? You know, we all are meditating and praying and lifting our consciousness and seeing the light of the divine in other people. But we also all know there's one more step we need to take, don't we? But we don't know what it is. So today's lesson is saying, you know, dig in, look inside, educate yourself, find one more step to take. Make it simple, make it doable, but find one more step to take. I don't usually like just upfront saying we're going to talk about politics, but I know who you are. And for many of you, I know this is on the top of your mind. And I know that some of you are very deeply troubled by this. And so it's my prayer that you can take these teachings that Uma has offered us so strongly and clearly, that you can take them and let them be the wings that carry you as you take action in the world. What do they say? Let these teachings from her be the wind beneath your wings. So you're flying, but she is helping lift us up by sharing these teachings. And look at gallery view. let these people and the ones who had to leave or couldn't come today, they are the wind beneath your wings also. You know, like, what is it? Geese, how they fly in formation and one of them is out in the lead for a long time, but then it's time for someone else to be in the lead. So that one goes all the way to the back and it gets pulled along, you know, like when you're a cyclist, I can't remember what you drafting. It's drafting. It's being pulled along by the others because it took its step, but it's in community. They're supporting one another. So remember that we have this. And as Mukti said, be compassionate. And as Brahmi said, make a list. When you say, I need to buy milk, I need to take the garbage out, you know, I need to become aware of one news cycle and I need to write one letter. Or I need to do one whatever. Put it on your list. Well, I need to meditate. That's the first thing. You know, maybe pick up the Gita and read chapter 1 and 2. So I'll be with you again next week. I'm looking forward to it. And have a beautiful day. Stay dry. And is Nola still here? Nola, what is the weather like? Are you in Boulder? Tell me what the weather's like there, please. I'm going to be coming to Golden. You got to unmute yourself.
There we go. Okay. Well, you better hurry up and pack your bags and get over here. It's, I call it a Boulder blue sky, perfectly blue. I can see it out my window. Not a cloud in the sky. The sun is up. My birds are singing. It's quite lovely. So we welcome you to Boulder.
Thank
or
you.
Not Boulder, Colorado. Yeah.
I heard it's going to be today and tomorrow. It's like 60 in full sunshine.
Oh, there you go.
And so I fly in tomorrow evening. I'm there with my aunt for one day on her 97th birthday.
Oh.
And then I fly back Sunday morning. But Saturday night, it snows. So thank God I grew up driving in the snow, but hopefully it will come back like riding a bike. And my rental car makes it alive.
Yeah, you'll do just fine.
So I'm thinking of you, you know.
I'll be thinking
Colorado.
Of you. Yes, yeah, so close. So close.
I know. I wish I had more time.
Yeah, I do too.
Someday.
Okay, someday.
All right. Thank you for letting us indulge in that little moment of weather reports. Have a beautiful day, everyone. And I look forward to being with you next week. And this Sunday, Acharya Atma will offer the message at the center. Om.
Thank you.